episode 75 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 3rd, 2012. My name is Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my multidimensional brother, James Furlough.
Here's a 3D stash coming right at you.
Oh man, it is exploding out of the screen. It's actually pretty impressive.
Thank you, thank you.
So is that just February?
Yes.
Man, it's got to be nice to have dark hair. See, like, the only reason why my mustache and beard, like, show is because I never, ever trim it. But, you know, so they actually get bulky, but I've got, like, those, like, light hair.
You especially know, you have an opportunity. You could kind of trim everything except for that part right above your lip.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's there now, but it's just not, I don't know. I'm sort of doing an extended furry February in that I've decided to not shave for a while. I don't really know when the end date is, but I'm not shaving anything. So I'm doing like the cheeks, the neck, the whole shebang.
That was what I did for furry February. No razor touched my face. For some people, like, well, I got to get rid of the neck beard. Okay. I understand if you're only half man. I get it.
I was going to say, that's like an important aspect of getting furry, though. Let's be honest.
Yeah. But it's all right. You know what? I support all levels of
manliness. Exactly.
So it's okay.
And
yeah, this is, so I'm rocking this, and you'll see this. Well, I guess you won't see the last one of the weeks since I'll be gone. But
yeah,
good.
Most of March, cool. Well, this week, like every week, we will be talking about facial hair and the technology that we use to shave them. That's not true. Well, maybe.
Because we won't shave them.
Yeah, who would do that? Like, the worst enemies on Reddit are the subreddit for beards and the subreddit for Wicked Edge. They're, like, diametrically opposed. They're worse than the liberal and conservative Reddits. Like, you know what I mean? Anyways, but this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure that he'd like to throw at you.
Y'all. Yes, I work for HP. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That is good, as we will be talking about HP today.
Yes.
About a conference that you should have been at, in my humble opinion.
I volunteered to go on multiple occasions.
Take one for the team.
Yeah.
If you'd like to follow us throughout the week, all of our witty thoughts and comments and observations and everything, you can follow us on our personal Twitters. Mine is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And if you'd like to follow the show and all of its interesting goings-on, whether it's on Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter or whatever, you can get all of that information and so much more at furloughbros.com. We also put all the links of the articles and videos that we talk about throughout the week, which is convenient for you because we talk about cool stuff, and I'm sure you're like, gosh, I wish I could get my hands on that. Not to mention the actual podcast is there, all the links for that business and the YouTube video. So no matter where you're listening to it, it's there. And, you know, we've been talking about this. We are currently in the process of breaking up the show into smaller chunks, more bite-sized nibbles, one might call them, for your viewing and audio pleasure. So if you're not really into a 17-hour podcast like sometimes these get, and you only got 15 minutes here and there and you just want little chunks, you can subscribe to that podcast, or you can subscribe to the big podcast, and it just flows beautifully like we were doing it all at once. Because we are.
Wait around for a couple hours.
and like we, you know, sometimes we'll ask this if, sometimes every time we ask, if you enjoy the show, feel free to tell somebody. We won't take that. We won't like demand you pay royalties for, you know, you can be like, man, I am so cool and witty. And if you want to be cool and witty like me, just listen to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. And, you know,
it helps you will become cool and witty.
Exactly. It helps you. It helps us. It helps your friends. Everybody wins. So let's get on it, guys. Yeah. So that's the show.
So, to get us kicked off, I would like to read parts of an email that was sent by a Mr. Andrew Mason, who is the CEO of Groupon. Have you heard of Groupon? Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Most people have. So he posts this and he says, "This is for Groupon employees, but I'm posting it publicly since it'll leak anyways." I love this guy. So he starts off, "People of Groupon, after 4.5 intense and wonderful years as CEO of Groupon, I've decided that I'd like to spend more time with my family. Just kidding. I was fired today."
Oh, jeez.
He goes, "If you're wondering why, you haven't been paying attention." Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And then he goes on to describe how the company is in semi-shambles, but it'll be okay.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yeah, it was just kind of you're like, I'm going to miss that guy. Because he was always just, you never were really sure what he was going to say.
Yeah.
In interviews or letters, he was just always, he's just a goofy guy, I guess. But yeah, so, and
so obviously I haven't been paying close enough attention because, well, okay, so this is my little side note. I don't like Groupon. They drive me crazy because they just would flood my emails, and it didn't matter how many times you like unsubscribe from their service, you just keep getting emails. And so finally I had Google spam everything. So they drive me crazy. So there's a part of me that's like, purposefully doesn't pay attention because I don't like them and I don't think their deals are that great. So what's going on?
All right. I will read the rest of the paragraph.
Okay.
From controversial metrics in their S1 to their material weaknesses, to 2 quarters of missing our own expectations and a stock price that's hovering around 1/4 of their listing price, because the events of the last year and a half speak for themselves. As CEO, I am accountable. So, yeah, they are described as like a decidedly non-tech company pretending to be a tech company.
Yeah.
And so they've, you know, they hit out big. It's that group buying deal discount stuff. And so they went public and it popped up really quick and people were like, oh, it's amazing. And yeah, then very quickly they were like, oh, you're not actually doing anything special. This is just deals. There's no like real technology driving this. Okay. I guess it's all about the network effect, right? And so their stock price has been slowly following. And I think like you, I signed up for the service because I wanted to know what it was all about. Well, actually, no, I read an article that was talking about their writing style. So I was I'm interested in learning about their writing style. So I signed up just so I could read their descriptions because they're like, they're funny, but they're appropriate. And so I was thinking about it for another project. So I started doing it. And like you, I was like 3 notifications a day and they were literally for nothing I wanted to buy. But
right,
from what I understand, if you're willing to like get through all of that every once in a while, there'll be a deal that is appropriate for you. And I'm like, well, isn't there a smarter way to filter? I feel like that's where the tech piece would come in.
Yeah. And I feel like other companies are
Pandora style. What do I like? What do I not like? And
I feel like other companies are much better at that. I actually like Living Social's app, which is basically Groupon. You know, it's the exact same thing, but they're a little better at doing location-based stuff. And they've got a really nice app that, like, if you're in the mood to look for if you're looking for date ideas, Living Social is great because you just flip through and you'll find some, oh, this is a nice restaurant that I want to – I've got a group – not a Groupon. I have a Living Social thing right now that's for the Fisherman's Grotto up in San Francisco. I feel like I say that all the time, and I don't think anybody realizes that I call it San Francisco, not because, the EIB radio dude, Rush Limbaugh, calls it that. That's what Milky Cabrera of the San Francisco Giants calls it, which I've always found really funny since he speaks Spanish and calls it San Francisco. Like, yeah, you'd feel like, come on, why is he saying it wrong? I was up in San Francisco last night and I was doing that all last night. And I felt like nobody gets this. I think they just think I'm like some crazy like Republican, but no, I'm just a real big fan of the baseball team.
Fair enough. Way to explain yourself.
I know. Yeah. Just, yeah. None of them are listening now. So now I'm, you know, it's whatever.
It's all good.
Anyways.
It's out there. Just, Tom, just listen to the podcast. You explain it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm awesome. You just got to listen to my stuff, dude. Anyways, what was I saying about this? Oh yeah. So if you're going to do that, yeah. Living social is the way to go.
Oh, okay.
I was
actually doing it for the writing style, not for the deals.
Right.
Cause I'm more like, how about you just don't spend the money?
Right.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do it anyways, cool.
Yeah, that's not
their point.
The thing.
Their point is to try to expose you to new things.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I hate those emails. If I'm looking for something, that's why the app is good and I'll go through the app. But if I'm not looking for it, I don't want it, you know, but yeah. Anyways, and they've also got, they also had some shady practices that I knew about that sort of like they would talk people into raising their prices for a month so that when the Groupon came along, they could drop it down to the regular rate and it would look really cheap. And then
that was because they would lose a ridiculous sum of money. Because you read stories of like small business owners who, you know, they would sign up for it and do it. And Groupon would basically be like, well, give everybody a 50% discount and just take the loss. And, you know, and the exposure is where it's at. And you'd hear these people where, like, they would do it, and they'd be like, I'd get, like, 1,000 customers, and I was done.
Yeah.
They were like, one person was like, I'm in such a hole now. I might break even all year now. Awesome. And so it was just like
thanks,
that.
Ruben.
And they were able to track it and be like, yeah, no one came back as repeat customers, which is that idea, right? Get them hooked in, and then they hopefully come back, and that's how you make
well,
it
yeah.
back.
Maybe that's your fault for not having a product that would draw people back. Jerks.
Well, in which case you just go, all right, Groupon isn't appropriate. But I don't know. Foursquare to me, I think, is one that they're doing it right. If I owned a business that was like a customer-driven business, like let's say I worked at Arby's and I was the manager of that store.
Hypothetically.
I never was, but I worked there once with you. That would be like, that's a perfect situation where I'd be like, oh yeah, totally. Come your first time, you get a deal. If you're the mayor, you get a free meal. Like, we'll comp you to, what's it up to now? Like $7.50 for a combo meal.
Yeah, dude, it's ridiculous.
I know. I remember it was $6 like 8 years ago. Wow. That's sad.
Yeah.
And then it's like they do another one where I think you come and your friend comes, you get a deal. And so they've structured it where it's like you can get the newcomers and then you can also get people who have been loyal with different types of deals.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that was like super cool way to do it. And that's what I would do if I own that kind of – I thought it'd be fun to open up a pizzeria just for the record. I probably never will. But if I did, I would totally use Foursquare and promote it massively. For those kind of deals, and I think it would work. But anyways, Groupon should be changing as leadership changes.
Nice. Cool.
Story.
Well, that'll be interesting. That'll be interesting to watch. Maybe I'll check it out again, but probably not.
Probably.
So I wanted to quickly bring you this story. Corning, the company who makes Gorilla Glass, has been talking about Willow Glass, which is their flexible glass, and they were talking about the fact that people were asking about it, and because it can like print circuits off of flexible glass, it's like super scratch resistant, super cool, and they basically said we're not expecting any consumer like any big consumer products to have that flexible glass for another 3 years. Just working with different
OEMs. 3 years?
Yeah, they think it'll take 3 years. Not because it's not done. They just don't think anybody's, like, there yet. But somebody asked them, like, in the article didn't like, quote this or anything, like, how this actually came up. So what I'm assuming happened was somebody asked them, well, do you think Apple might use it for their new iWatch? And Corning came back and was like, no, they're not going to use it for the new iWatch. They've got, like, 100 designers working on it, and they're going to be using different types of glass. So you're like, what? what? You can't.
That reporter is just like shaking in excitement.
Yes.
Yes! Scoop of the week. Maybe the hour.
Yeah,
Apple.
Pretty much, right. Yeah. So, as though there was any question.
Tim Cook is on the phone. Okay, look, I realize that Jobs isn't around anymore, but no.
Yeah, why would you do that? So, iWatch.
That's funny.
gonna have probably curved
Apparently
glass.
It's a real thing.
Using Corning Gorilla Glass, yeah, and it's a real thing. And not only is it a real thing, it's a huge, humongous Apple project. They've got a tremendous number of engineers working on it, so that's exciting.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where you're like, he always knew it, but he didn't know it, or he always felt like that could be true, because why else would all those rumors be popping up?
Right.
And which I'm just like, Pebble, you better hurry up and ship me my watch. I paid you a significantly long time ago. You have already started shipping. I know. I got a color one, and he had some sort of manufacturing snafu and a Chinese New Year week off. I get it. But I'll be supremely disappointed if I get my watch like a month before Apple announces an iWatch.
What are you gonna say?
Just for the record.
Well, that's what happens.
That's what I get for being an early adopter, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not even an early adopter. You're an investor.
Exactly. Which is why mine was on a discount. But anyways.
Right. Makes me glad I didn't invest.
But it's still cool. I am still very pumped to get it.
Oh, yeah.
I also know that the second Apple comes out with the iWatch, I will instantly regret the decision. But
probably.
It will be okay.
But
dude, you know.
What?
You know I will.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Because Apple's going to cheat and give themselves all the special APIs and
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
It's going to work amazingly well, and you're going to be like, what the heck? Why? What the heck?
Dang. It's all right. It'll be okay.
Man.
I'm not hurt. It's all good.
Yeah. I just thought that was, oh, man. I love that. It's just so matter of fact. Yeah, they've got like over 100 designers working on it. What? You can't just say that.
Yeah.
Like, who are you that you don't pay attention enough attention to this stuff to know that nobody ever says that about Apple, you know? Oh, whatever. Anyways. But that's all I got on that one. The rest is rumor.
The rest is rumor.
And so rumor is fun, but not that interesting. Yeah.
Agreed. Just get it here, please. So I got something that was decidedly not rumor.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Record the time. Because that's what I do. We need a producer or something like that. We're hiring. Pay is not great, but we're hiring. Announcing it right now.
We give a percentage of all profits. That's how we pay.
No, I'm not going to go that far. But you get your name in the credits.
That's true.
We'll maybe even start doing credits, because that will be your job.
Yeah. since we'll have somebody to do that, we can afford it.
Exactly. Oh, I love having a phantom organization.
Yeah.
When I total side story. Did I tell you about this? I had to have told you about this.
Probably.
When we were doing Bobby Autographer stuff, I actually created a job section, because you know I didn't want to actually make sales, so I did all the fun stuff around it.
Yeah.
But I remember that. Yeah, I made a career page and like, oh yeah, these are all the different people we can hire, and we'll call them interns, so we don't have to pay them. It'll be fantastic. You get experience. Put it on your resume.
Have we ever told anybody about Bob the Autographer on this show? In case you're a new listener, James and I started, ran, and operated a t-shirt design company where we designed and sold t-shirts. And then I was the president, and we flipped
Which
a
I
coin.
I think you got that
because
of the coin toss,
yep,
if I remember
yep.
correctly.
Yeah, we were sitting in the bank, and we needed a president, and so we flipped a coin, and yes, I won.
Decided.
I think we switched off at the next board of directors meeting.
Yeah.
And then
assisted at our parents' table with my mom taking notes. Or
yeah, I've got a far way now that I do this show in their closet.
we have good investors. That's all.
Exactly.
Really believe in what we're doing.
Family business, man. That's what we're about.
actually, so I'll just keep changing it. if you've ever read the book, The Millionaire Next Door, which is a fantastic book, I highly recommend it. They actually do talk about, you're not going to like this, but they talk about how there's this whole generation where the parents had like the struggle, had to figure out how to make it on their own, and they did and were successful. And so then they wanted their kids to be successful. And so as a result, they were like, they would give them the time and the energy to like, to develop whatever it was that they were doing, whether it was like a business or some talent or skill. And they'd be like, yeah, we don't want you to worry about the expenses, so we'll pay for everything. And then this book, I mean, I read this book like 10 years ago, and it was already an older book, which just, it's just gotten worse over time, which is interesting. And they'll say like, they'll have these kids who have this entitlement, and they'll be literally like 30 years old in their parents' basement, like figuring it out. You know, they're eventually going to go out on their own and they're going to make it. And the parents will be like, oh yeah, Johnny's down in the basement. He's working on his project. And, you know, and eventually he's going to be successful and we're going to make it. And we just want to support him so that, you know, he can go big time. And this guy's research was basically like, actually the best thing to do is to kick your kid out of the nest and have him figure out how to make it on his own. Yeah, I know it hurts in the short term, but you're actually hurting him or her because they don't learn how to do that struggle like you did. So these parents think that they're helping their children, but they're actually not. It's a fascinating read. And
So this is basically like a 3-minute commentary on my life right now.
What I was going to say is, yeah, in some ways, man, you were like, oh, yeah, my parents are helping with this business, and now I'm hanging out in the closet doing this, and how much money have we made off of this one?
The thing is that that I recognize that.
Because you're like, this isn't an interesting book, actually.
I got to say, I was like, it drives me crazy. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm actually, it's almost, I've often described it as our parents are frustratingly flexible. They're frustratingly great to live with because they completely stay out of my way if I need them to. If I need help, they're willing to help. But it's like, you know, I pretty much only sleep here, but
Well, I'll have you know, my recommendation was to kick you out right after you graduated, and they didn't listen to me. So.
Well, that was probably – I appreciate that since I actually would have probably starved and died if they had done that right after I graduated, as it was the worst economic situation since the Great
Depression.
Well, and
the thing that the book doesn't actually bring up, which I think is such a huge factor now – we're totally off topic – is that you have the student loan thing hanging over you.
Yeah.
Right? And so I don't want to say – and even if you were to like declare bankruptcy, doesn't get rid of the student loans. So it's a different situation. I just want to – it's a very hard and tricky one, and I count my blessings that I don't have to deal with it. And,
I'm in a particularly tough spot because I think, you know, this is just – yeah, like we said, this is a bigger commentary on this like whole social stuff. But it's like for me, what I really feel like for the first 2 years after I graduated, I didn't have a choice. I was going to have to live with somebody, and if my parents were willing to do it, I was going to have to go to an aunt or uncle who was willing to do it or live on the street. I mean, like I was in a tough spot. I couldn't get – I never stopped working. I never wasn't working. I just never had the money, or I would have moved to North Carolina. And that's the biggest thing is I never had to move, and that's actually what they really facilitated was my ability to stay in the area I wanted to stay in because the jobs that I eventually wanted to have were here. So they allowed me to get the job that I have now, which is a great job and the job that's, you know, taking me off. But like now it's I've been like fully salaried for like 4 months, and it's our parent, and this is what's crazy. Our parents are like, no, stay here as long as you need to get yourself under your feet. And I'm like, I'm so ready to go. I can't stand it. I just can't find a place because everything's so expensive and all my roommates want it to cost less, bigger houses. And it's just, I don't know. So,
which is, And you chose to hang around for that situation.
I know. Can we talk about something that's less, you know, like irritating to me?
All right. This is – yeah, we can.
HP. Slate 7.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
So HP had a little mini announcement at the Mobile World Congress last week, which, as a friendly reminder, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions during this little time we have together.
Good, neither do I.
And so I can say that I was really bummed that I didn't get to go.
Yes.
Because I am actually doing some mobility stuff now, like, can I say on the side? It's not my real job. And And so I was like, oh, I should go so I should get an idea of what's going on. No, they let like this other team go, and I stayed behind and worked. Which
it's awful, man.
Ran, get it. You call my boondoggle bluff. That's cool. So what they released, and actually a lot of people said like this was the darling of the show, if you will, was the HP Slate 7. Because they have another slate, which it might just be called the Slate. I don't remember, but it was running like Windows 7 on it or something or whatever. So it's a care to guess how big it is?
7 inches.
It's a 7-inch. Yes, it's a 7-inch display, the 124 by 600 screen. It's got the A9 processor, gigabyte of RAM, other stuff we don't care about. So it is an Android tablet.
Oh, baby.
With an HP logo on the back.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. And so here's what's interesting about it. The one thing we do care about is its price. It is going to be $169.
That is affordable.
That was what they said. They're creating it's a budget-friendly, lower-end device that is, quote, priced to sell.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a good price point. That's significantly cheaper than, you know, the Android 7. They're in the Nexus 7.
I don't know about significantly, because isn't there a low-end, like, $199? Something like
that. Yeah, it's $40, $30.
I guess percentage-wise, it actually is kind of a lot, huh?
Right.
Okay, all right, I'll take it back. So it is significantly cheaper. And, you know, HP's whole hope here is that we can take advantage of its supply chain competencies and advantages and stuff like that, because we actually sell stuff. And so they're coming out with it. I watched the hands-on, and they're like, so it's a tablet. So if you have ever seen – here's what you do. Watch some of the Nexus 7 videos. Just pay attention to the screen part, and that's what it is. It's an Android tablet, right? I mean, it's
right.
And actually, what was kind of frustrating, but what people noticed is that they're like, yeah, there's really nothing distinct about this, other than it's made by HP, which used to represent good quality hardware. That's up to debate. I think it's still better than those Dell guys, but I am biased. I may not represent them, but I'm clearly biased. Okay,
so what I would say is this: I mean, if it is the same quality and capability as the Nexus 7, but $40, $30 cheaper, that is a great feature in and of itself. The real question is, and this is the difficult part: is if it's just a vanilla stock Android, which would be great, so it's very competitive in what it does.
I don't know
the Nexus 7. And would you? And you said it's 1 gig of RAM. See, that's the biggest problem: is it's only got 1 gig of RAM. You know, if it had like 2 gigs of RAM.
Well, so it's got 16 gigabytes of storage. I just sure we're on the same page.
I said 1 gig of RAM.
Yeah, I know. I know that's what you said. I just want to make sure that's what you meant.
Yes. What I'm talking, you know, if you had more, you know, and maybe 1 gig is, I don't know.
Well, their whole thing is they're not, he, in another article, the guy, Alberto Torres, it's probably not how that's done. He's the I'm laughing at myself. He's the head of HP's mobility group. He said that HP is targeting the consumer who really wants an entertainment solution. He admits that the tablet won't be competitive with something that's $300 today.
So, you mean the iPad?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's what he's saying, right? Which is probably true. If you want an iPad, you're going to get an iPad, and you're going to spend that amount of money, and there's nothing HP could do. So even spec-wise, if it were exactly the same spec-wise, you still wouldn't get it. And so they went, well, we're going to go after this low-end space because they still see a place there. Now, what they did say is that this is the first of many to quote a – game from, to quote a line from Worms, Armageddon, where they're going to come out with the whole spectrum. You know, HP totally believes in the idea of, you know, there are different customers and they have different needs and different uses, and they will make a product to fit every single one of those, which is like decidedly the exact opposite of Apple. And, you know, it kind of goes the way that Android does, right? With this like, oh, we'll flood the market with devices and you pick the one that you want. Who cares if it's confusing and you don't know? You'll know because you'll just find the one you want. So that's what HP is going to do. So this is just their first one. Of course, I did think it was kind of funny. Which one was it? Pando Daily was kind of making fun of them because they still need to figure out a way to differentiate themselves from the rest of the pack. I don't think it's good enough to say Android tablet by HP.
Honestly, though, okay, this is my reaction.
Yeah, let me hear it.
And now I recognize I'm different, but I just looked up the specs on the Nexus 7, and the Nexus 7 is the exact same thing. 1 gig of RAM, 16 gigs. The only difference is it's got the Tegra. The Nexus 7 has the Tegra quad-core processor, whatever, dual-core processor, whereas this one's just got the A9 dual-core processor. I don't really know the difference. I'd have to look. But I have a feeling that if you pick up both devices, they feel, when you're actually using them, they feel very, very similar to each other.
Probably.
And one costs $30 less. Like, if it's the same device and one's $30 less, why the heck would I get the more expensive one? I get it. It's made by Google, but it's the same, you know. And honestly, like, this is my thought, I trust HP
more than Google. But.
Yeah, you've got the one thing that Google is the thing that Google has been repeatedly horrible at is supply chain management and technical support because they're not a hardware company.
Yeah.
HP is. They've got that entire infrastructure done. They've got, you know, you'll be able to see them. You'll be able to walk into Fry's or Best Buy's and people will have them.
Exactly.
The tech squad guys will know how to use it. And I don't see any reason why, you know, an HP tablet can't sit side by side with a Samsung tablet as something that consumers will sit there and go, oh, yeah, I know this company and I feel comfortable about it. Oh, and by the way, this is the cheapest of them all and it's got all the same, it's got the exact same hardware capabilities. I don't know. It's compelling. It's actually, you know, every once in a while I lean towards wanting to get an Android tablet because I want an Android device and just haven't decided, you know, I want a phone. But if I were going to – honestly, if it were today and I had to buy an Android tablet, I would seriously check this out and I would probably get it over the Android because – it's cheaper in the same device, the same hardware, with the entire supply chain and customer service of HP. I don't know, and I'm not just saying that because you work for HP. You know,
that's true.
That's actually how I feel. I think people. How did HP differentiate themselves and become the top laptop sellers?
Well, so here's the problem with that, right? And this is where you start to have issues where it's like HP could sell a bazillion of these things. They're the number one PC vendor in the world, and but we don't make any money off of it.
Yeah, you only make $1 billion a year.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, margin percentage wise, it's not fantastic at all.
I realize
2%. You know, so it's like it's an awful lot of effort for not a huge payoff. And so that's going to be the big fear. And then, you know, when HP instantly goes to like the low of the low, like, oh, great, here we go, race to the bottom. Woo, we're going to win. Right. And yeah, I don't know. So, but HP, what I do like about this round is that HP seems to be a little bit more humble than last time. Remember when they came out with like WebOS and they were like, HP sells one PC every 2 seconds and a printer every 2 seconds, and we're going to be the number one plus in the market.
Right.
And I mean, it was just like, geez, can you beat your chest any harder, guys? Okay. You know, and then it was, what was it? 41, 49 days later.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, number one plus. Woohoo.
Yeah. Nice job, guys.
Yeah. So this time around, they're a little bit more humble. They're like, I mean, he flat out said, if between us and the iPad mini, you're going to choose the iPad mini. We get it. And they're like, we're hoping to film this low end. We're going to bring more to the market. As we learn more, we're stepping into it. And they have said that we recognize that we're the number one PC vendor, but we want to be the number one computer vendor. And we recognize that we are not that right now.
Right.
And, you know, so I thought it was good. In a lot of ways it's saying the same thing, but just the way that it said it, it felt like it was a much more humble approach into it. So I will see. I don't actually know when it's going to come on sale because I didn't look, but My guess is that it's sometime later this year. That's probably something I should know.
Probably.
That'll be whenever it was. They may not have mentioned it either, because I feel like that actually would have been in the articles. But so they're just kind of getting feedback from them. The other last point about this was that they were talking about, once again, that differentiating part. And so this is where HP, like, it kind of feels like they had a hat with like buzzwords, and they were just pulling them out of the hat and then like rearranging them together. And so they were like, you got all the right words, but no, it doesn't work that way. So they were talking about how I'm wishing I could get this. Oh, so they were talking about the features behind it, and after it gives it price, it then the number one feature on there. So it talks about how, okay, let me just slow down and make sure I find this right. So one of the things it refers to it as is an entertainment solution, right?
Okay.
And, you know, and they say that like, all right, it's entertainment. It's a solution. Cool, cool, cool. And then like the very first like thing that it can do is you can print with HP ePrint. It says you can effortlessly print photos for easy sharing.
Well, you know.
And they were like, easy sharing, like relative to like email, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Dropbox shared folder. Like even ePrint requires an active internet connection, an HP built web-enabled printer, and email capability. How is that
right?
Easy. They're like, and how is this, like, and for an entertainment device, that's your number one feature that you're putting on the website. And so they were just kind of like, it's a little weird. And they were even saying that like the Beats Audio, which is, you know, HP's partner with Beats Audio, so like everything is Beats Audio. They're like, that one's even like halfway down the page.
He's like, yeah, that's gonna
honestly, that should be like, that should be your number one, or at least above printing.
I'm going to say, you know, to me, like that, like I've said this before. To me, that was one of the biggest selling points on the iPhone was its sound capabilities. You know, it's the best sound quality device out there, in my humble opinion. Which, by the way, Apple, get your stuff together on iTunes. What the heck is going on with that stuff, man? It's glitching out hardcore on me all the time. Like songs just getting like where you like click on a song to play it, and it'll play some other random song.
iTunes on your PC?
Oh no, on my phone.
Oh,
dude, I exercise iTunes. I could be a beta tester because I'm like always listening to music and messing with it and doing all sorts of like multitasking and doing this and that and, you know, whatever. But downloading songs while listening to other songs and doing, you know, ugh. But this last week I was rather irritated by the performance of iTunes on the iPod or on the iPhone. But that's besides the point.
Well, I do not represent Apple either, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. But that's, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, it's good that they're trying to make an emphasis on the music front, is what I guess I'm trying to say, because I think that's an important aspect of these devices that often gets ignored, you know, and I think that's one of the biggest shortcomings of the Samsung Galaxy S3 is that its audio system is terrible, and it's just not very good sound quality, and that's really disappointing. And so it's, you know, I think that's the sort of thing, if HP, even if they are basically selling that for no profit, if HP can build a piece of hardware that is competitive on pretty much every, it is as good or a little bit better on every, you know, tick you've got, and all it does is run the same software as everything else, and it's $30 less. Why wouldn't you do that? It just doesn't make, you know,
in the store and buy it right then.
Right. And for me, it's like, I'm willing to pay way more for the best phone, but for a tablet, I don't know. I'm a little bit more willing to.
We already got the best tablet.
Exactly. Well, but you know, it's, you know, I really like
what you can be,
but I didn't buy it. Okay. That's the thing. And I probably wouldn't have if that's the thing. If it were my own money, I would have gotten something cheaper, not because I didn't want an iPad mini. I did, but because I'm cheaper than that. To me, that once you get to a certain level of performance where it performs well, it does all the tasks it needs to do. Now let's start talking price. And You know, I'm not going to buy something that's more expensive just because it's got a, you know, an Apple on it or an HP on it or a Google logo on it. You know, whatever the case may be. You know, okay,
let's be honest. What if it goes over your eyes and on your wrist?
Oh, man.
Anyways, I won't bring that back.
Yeah.
But all right. So there you go. That's the HP Slate. That's their announcement. They made it at the Mobile World Congress. I don't know if I'll ever get to see one, to be totally honest. But I did get to play with the Surface, so I'm slowly catching up to the tablet arena. That was fun. The keyboard is different. I think I could learn how to do it. But
you get to play with the Surface Pro or just the Surface RT?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
I don't know, to be honest. Could not tell you. I know that it did dump me onto the... Oh, it had Word. Does that matter?
No.
Okay. I don't know. Honestly. Couldn't tell you.
All right.
But it worked. It seemed to work well. I mean, it wasn't laggy or anything. You know, the touch part, that was fun.
Yeah.
Keyboard, there's a learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. Nobody's perfect. But interesting.
Let's talk about... Speaking of perfection, Firefox.
Okay. Yeah, because this had to do with the perfection. You think they're...
I don't know. Okay. I was just making a transition.
I appreciate that.
Speaking of animals.
Yeah, exactly. Arston and wildlife. So Firefox made a big announcement at the Mobile World Conference in Barcelona.
Congress. Okay. Congress. Okay.
All right. Gotcha.
They spent a lot of time naming it. Okay.
Yeah. The Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain,
which I did not go to, in case you were wondering.
Much to your chagrin. It's okay, Firefox.
It's all right. Yeah, you'll figure out some other way to make it up for me.
Yeah, sure.
No, they won't. <was mean. laughs>
They don't feel bad. Nope. Mozilla, the developers for Firefox, the Firefox browser, made a big announcement. They are getting into the OS game in a small way. And by small way, I mean mobile. And I also mean this isn't that significant.
You happens to mean the other one you thought it was. I like Sunday afternoons.
Yeah. So Firefox is they're developing an operating system. Pretty cool. Pretty big news. They basically said we're building a operating system for phones, for mobile devices, tablets, and telephones. Mobile.
Looks like they picked the right Congress to present it to him.
Exactly. And basically this thing is it's like they're really big about like HTML, like you'll be able to build everything in HTML and do all sorts of HTML stuff with it.
This sounds like another operating system that recently got sold to a TV maker.
Yeah. Huh. Or like another operating system that just had a $1,300 laptop announced. Basically this is just like WebOS and Chrome. It's like WebOS and its interface, I guess, where it's sort of like it's not like you're just sitting in a browser, but it's also kind of like Chrome in that it's like just a browser. Like it's okay, it's cool. Now one of the cool things about this is that, you know, Mozilla is truly open source. They are like, you know, they are what Google claims that they are, like what Google pretends to be, in that you know, you can, you know, without hesitation, you can go in, change code, build stuff, be part of the new build. All Mozilla really does is kind of measure or manage rev changes and really like manage the downloading and stuff like that. Like they kind of facilitate.
They're more like a nonprofit, I suppose.
Yeah, that's actually that's the best way to describe it. And they've got a whole suite of applications that they use. They're just their most famous one is the Firefox operating system, but for those of you who use FileZilla, that's a great FTP client, or Thunderbird if you're into calendars and email. My boss loves Thunderbird. It's like his
really
ever. Yeah.
I downloaded it and I was kind of like, well, this is just like Outlook. Why?
Okay. Yeah, it works fine. It's just like Outlook, but if you don't use Outlook, it's, you know.
Yeah. All
it's,
right.
You know, it's good. I mean, I don't have any problems with it. It's good enough.
I don't want good enough.
I know. But
it's not what I do. But my calendar is very important to me.
Yeah, I realize that. And mine's
that's why we spent 20 minutes talking on it last week.
Right. So they build all sorts of different stuff. So they're building an operating system. And one of the big selling points on this thing is that it's supposed to be for a very light operating system. Cool. In that it'll be able to run on a lot of different hardware, inexpensive hardware. You won't have to share anything with Google. It's actually already been introduced. No, no, that's not true. What was I about to say? There's a different one. But I don't know. It sounds cool. I'm glad Mozilla's getting in there, and I'm not convinced that
So I want to know why.
Why they're doing it?
What's their reason for getting in on it? Or are they just like to build cool stuff because that's what they are?
I was going to say, I think it's a two-pronged thing. I think one of it is they think they can, so they want to. They're going to.
Okay.
And it doesn't hurt. It's not like they make any money off of it, so they're just doing it. And I think the other reason is because they've been looking around, and you know, one of the things that we've been talking about for quite some time is the idea of like a truly, truly open source project, an operating system to run on mobile, to run on simple system of a chip computers. And I think that, you know, they still see an opportunity for that outside of the Android and iOS world. And they're looking at it saying, you know, we could be that. We could be the Linux of mobile operating systems. And the reason why I heard a lot of people talking about this, especially Mozilla fans, were really, really trumpeting up how, you know, this is a big deal. Like, they're really, you know, there's still space. The thing is that they did all this really juxtaposed right next to Ubuntu Touch, which not only is the Linux, or do I think it will be the Linux of mobile, but it's literally the Linux of mobile, because it's actually Linux, exactly. but to me, Linux or Ubuntu Touch brings something that nobody else does, and this is what's huge. And I think everybody kind of gets the sense that what they're doing is the future of mobile. In that, what you'll have is you'll have one piece of hardware that has a native storage area, but for the most part, it's just internet. It's an internet connected device that has certain stuff tethered to it. It's got a screen that you can touch and operate on, and then it's got a phone. But the really cool part is you can plug it into a dock, and all of a sudden it'll connect to your keyboard, mouse, and your screen, and it will be a full desktop operating system,
which is like awesome.
Which is just regular Ubuntu running on your phone. And if you were to get some hardware accelerated stuff, you know, built into this little desktop thing so that, you know, you plug it in and now you got a full blown superpower computer. Mm-hmm. Everybody would like, well, it's just crazy. And the thing is that it's like, it's completely open source. The best part is like, you can put a Java app on it if you want, why not? And they're like, they've already talked about how to like, how you can build stuff that can easily compile Android apps to run on Ubuntu, which, by the way, Tizen, which has also got a lot of attention at the World Mobile World Congress. The one article I read, this is, I want you all to realize, you heard this on Little Rose first, but their comments were like, everybody's talking about how, like, you know, what are they going to do with all their apps? And they're like, dude, you could totally build a virtual machine that allow you to run Android written apps super easily on Tizen, and that's what they're going to do. And that's what everybody's going to do, which is great. But I don't know, this whole thing is just, it's really interesting. Looking at all these operating systems kind of go at it. And I think Firefox OS is going to get a little bit of, you know, and it'll get.
Well, and so I was reading here, it says they're actually going to target emerging economies. And then they list Brazil, Colombia, Poland, Venezuela, Serbia. Serbia and Spain, which I don't know about Spain, but You know, but so their idea is to go, hey, we're going to make this, it's this lightweight thing that, you know, the wholesale price is $100. And, you know, and so they're going to try to, you know, they're going to try to go after that market, which in some ways has been, I don't want to say neglected, but it, the tech hasn't trickled down to them yet.
Well, and you know, it's just the nature of Moore's Law. You're going to get devices. The thing is by writing a really lightweight operating system like that, it could give you a year head start on everybody else who refuses to build a lighter weight operating system. Thing is, you give it a year, and all of a sudden, all of those $100 phones will be able to run more powerful operating systems like Ubuntu Touch and Android. And Tizen, and you know, and I don't know. I think they've got a decent strategy. It's a cool concept. I hope they do well, because one of the nice things about Mozilla is they're really big into pushing forward technology. You know, so they're going to come up. You know, one, it's like,
are they really?
Well, they were with Firefox. I mean,
well, yeah, but I mean, like, when's the last time you used a Firefox browser?
I use it for development stuff.
Oh, really?
On occasion, yeah. Okay. I mean, because they have a lot of add-ons, and they're just their ability to, like, you know, the thing
I
is.
I just feel like that was a true statement, even 5 years ago. And
that love and feeling. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if they were to come into a new market with a new piece of hardware and a new idea, like, let's try to develop the idea of. How would you build a phone where everything is built out of HTML, Java, JavaScript, you know, and it uses web technologies. You know, that's something that I realized that, you know, WebOS was, that's what WebOS is supposed to be, but it never really got any development time, and it didn't get the world community behind it to try to make it better. Whereas there's actually, like, there's a legitimate argument there to be made that that's a good way to design operating systems.
Okay.
And I think that's what I'm excited for. I think you'll start to see things that will get incorporated into Android and iOS and Ubuntu that, you know, will make them a lot of money and Mozilla none, that Mozilla could pioneer.
You're bad.
Yeah. I don't see this as a game changer for the makeup of the different. I don't see this as a game changer. Whereas I actually think Ubuntu, you know, really and truly could make some real good volume in India and China, where they're looking for alternatives to iOS and Android. And just like Tizen, you know, Tizen's biggest competitive advantage is that China doesn't hate the operating system. They like Samsung, and they want, you know, they'll allow Samsung to make it in there. So it's like, you know, the big thing that they were talking about with Tizen, which is Samsung's operating system, says, I don't think I said that yet, is that they're basically like, it could become the number one operating system in the entire world before America ever gets one, because, you know, which is what we were saying last week. Like, you know, once again, you heard it on the Furlough Bros first. You know, that idea that
you gotta say that louder, more prouder, man.
I know. Just
if you heard that on the Furlough Bros first.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
The problem that we're running into is that I have a stash, and so it's good. It's making me more forceful, more exuberant, over the top. Awesome. Yeah. Might be a good adjective. Shave off that beard, and you too can have these powers.
Oh, jeez. That would be dangerous, James.
I'm okay with that.
Anyways. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
It's interesting. It'll be fun to watch. I don't think it's that big of a deal in the long run.
Firefox OS, prove us wrong.
Yeah, guys, it's your turn.
So let's switch gears here.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your adventure.
Okay. So I got an iPad. I have an iPhone. And there was a project that I invested in through Kickstarter called the iPulse, iMyPulse. I don't know. It's a little Bluetooth gamepad. It's a little key. It's an arrow pad, a couple of buttons. It connects for you via Bluetooth, and you'll be able to play video games with it, which is cool because I like
that's
to
cool.
play.
Yeah, like you could play on your iPad.
Yeah, on your iPad, it'll connect your iPad, your iPhone,
your phone,
and what I really am
Bluetooth
looking
capable. All right,
exactly. What I'm really looking forward to.
Would it work
to,
with your PC as well? Assuming
probably,
that it's Bluetooth.
Yes, probably. They might. I don't know if they'll have the drivers for it, but one of the cool things about it is because it's like they decided to add software that would also make it what they call a media controller, so that's like volume controls and song skip and stuff, and you can also do like a Find My Keys. So you can have an app on your iPhone, you hit it, and your little controller will make noises. So if it's connected to your keys, you can find your keys, which I like. I don't know. There's cool little things there. But one of the features that I was really excited about was a camera remote. You'd be able to hit a button and it'll take a picture. And the reason why I like this is because for probably the last 10 years, I've wanted to make stop motion videos just for fun. And one of the big dilemmas I've always had is that in order to take the pictures, I have to touch the camera, which moves the camera minutely. And it drives me nuts because it changes the shot over time and it just looks terrible. So I wanted a little remote, and I'm like super cheap and never had like a camera, and I don't know, I finally had the camera and I was really excited to get this device. And as often happens with Kickstarter projects, they're having trouble with tooling, so of course it's taking much longer than they anticipated, but they're working really hard and they're having great achievements, so here are our developments so far. And I was just like, I was totally bumming on it. So earlier this week I had this brilliant thought. I was like, I wonder if there's an app that would allow me to control my camera from another device, which seems like really obvious when you look at it. Like, yeah, of course it would be. So I went and I started Googling around, and I found this app called Duplicam. And you just download it, and you can turn your iPhone into either a controller, the remote, or to have it be controlled, so you can share the camera. And then they have an iPad app that costs a little bit of money, but I'm not a crazy person like you. I'm willing to spend a dollar here and there on apps. So I downloaded
this. I'll be retired on a beach sipping pina coladas, and you'll be working, so whatever.
Oh, well, fair enough.
You'll be like, on my apps, so take that.
But I get to live with my parents for the rest
I'll
of
have
my life
because
they won't push
app.
Me out. So
and I'll just do this.
I'll feel like I'm at home because I will be at home. Anyways, so I'm looking at this app and I'm playing with it, and it's working very well. It's very cool. It allows you to connect over Bluetooth or over Wi-Fi, and to be able to take a camera. So I'm like, wow, I'm going to have to use this. I'll have to try it out. And then all of a sudden I had this, I was like playing with it, and they've got a button. It's a camera button and it says all underneath it. And I was like, what is this? Ooh. And so as I looked into it, basically what I realized is it's a camera, or it's a button that all the cameras that are connected to the controller, it'll take a picture with them all at the same time. So I was like, that's awesome. I could do like a multi-shot of like one thing all at the same time if I had like multiple cameras. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And then all of a sudden, boom, brain explodes, brilliant idea. What happens if I only had two cameras? They were side by side looking at the same object. It would be like a stereo picture, be all 3D-ish. So I was like super excited. So I'm feeling stoked because now I'm like, so I grab another iPhone and I download the app on that iPhone and I start taking double pictures. Works really great, Bluetooth, so I could do it in the middle of the forest if I wanted to. And then I take this, I then went on and I started looking for more apps. And I am not the sort of person that just like goes and downloads random apps and tries to find apps. Like I'm actually like really resistant to that sort of thing for some reason. Weirdly enough, I was just so and because there's just so many garbage ones out there, it's so hard to find it. Well, anyways, I stumbled across this app called 3D Light. It's a free app that on your iPhone, it allows you to take two pictures one after another in order to create a 3D effect. So you like take a picture, move it over, take a picture, and then it'll like put the picture together. And I was like, well, this is kind of lame. Can't I just import two pictures? Yeah. Well, okay, I'm reading around, and it turns out that the 3D Studio by the same company allows you to do that on the iPad Mini. Now we're getting a little bit tough, though, because the Duplicam app was 99 cents, which is expensive. This one was $3.99. So I'm going to have to pay $4 for this app. So I thought about it long and hard, and after about 15 seconds, I decided to get it. And
yes!
So I download this app, and I immediately start, like, importing stuff in there. And they've got all these, like, cool features where, like, one's like a Twitch where, like, you line up your objects, and it'll, like, it'll switch between them, which makes it, like, your brain kind of sees it as a 3D picture. It's very cool. And without
any glasses, examples, I want to see this.
Yes.
Let me, I will verbally describe it for people. So it looks like the screen is twitching to make it look like a 3D object. Actually, and you'll have to tell me if you could save it off as like a GIF or something. I know exactly what we'll use for our header for this week.
Check it out.
Or you'll have to tell me if there's... Oh, okay, sorry. You talk so my screen changes.
Check it out. Look at it. It's going. Does it look like it? No? Maybe? Maybe yes? Maybe no?
Okay, I see the... I didn't want to talk. Okay. So I saw the twitching for sure. I don't know if there's a lag, and so I don't see the 3D effect to it, but...
Maybe not. Well, I gotta look. So one of the things that this can do is you can let me look. I know that there is.
And then are there just any like straight up 3D-ish like shots?
What do you mean?
Basically, what I want you to take a picture, 3D landscape it, or you know, take a picture in landscape that's 3D, send it to me, so that when I post this podcast, I can use it.
I will. You can make 3D, and what you can do, like, the red, blue, so this is where the story's gone. So, you can do, like, the red, blue pictures where, like, you know, where like, the old school red, blue goggles, mm-hmm. you put them on, and it'll automatically make
interesting.
Those. You can also do it like a magic eye where, like, you bring it up to your face and you pull it away, and when you let it focus, you see the actual image, and it's the image of. So they're very cool. They're awesome, man. They're it's a cool little couple different, and they look good, sort of. I don't know how the red blue looks, and this is why I'm gonna say, because the red blue requires the red blue
glasses.
Which you would think would be really easy to find in a store or something. You
know, well, everyone switched over to the polarized ones.
Right. Yeah, but still, I mean, like, it's classic, you know?
True.
So I decide I want a pair of these. Well, I look online. It's kind of cool, dude. You can just – there are companies that you can literally you just address it to this company, and in the envelope you put another envelope with your address and paid postage, and when they get your envelope, they'll just throw a pair in there for free and mail it back to you.
Whoa.
Like, they'll for free. They don't cost anything. You just have to pay for, you know, for this thing.
Got anyways. It.
I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool, but I don't want to wait 3 days. So let's get real. Let's go look around town. So I'm like calling up party stores. I'm like going to like tech stores. I'm like looking online who might have it. Like, I can't find them anywhere at all. It's driving me nuts. They're like, and so I'm like, I probably spent like 3 days looking for a store that might sell these. I went to Toys R Us. I went to toy stores to see if they had like those.
Wow. Yeah. You think they would do it?
No, they use like new fancy polarized light ones too. Like, I don't even get it, man. So I'm kind of annoyed by this whole process, but then I decide, you know what? I'm not going to give up yet. I'm already pushed it past 3 days. I would have the glasses if I just ordered them online by this point. But now I got to wait another 3 days, so I'm still going to go look. So I started going to craft stores, trying to buy red and blue cellophane, just thinking that would be awesome. Can't find those anywhere. Nobody sells red cellophane.
Oh, my God.
Calling up art stores. I'm calling
up
theater stores.
That's why the glasses don't exist anymore. Gosh.
I know. It's driving me nuts. That's all right. I went to Office Depot, Office Max. I went to Staples looking for red-blue transparencies. No, they don't sell colored transparencies. Nobody sells colored transparencies. You can't find these things anywhere. You can't find the material to make them anywhere.
What about a balloon?
It's not an awful idea. Well, but it's got to be transparent enough. The only thing that I saw that where it was actually looked like a good suggestion was they basically said, take a transparency and a red and blue Sharpie, and it works well enough. You know what the thing is? Have you ever tried to buy some transparencies? They come in like 50 sheet packages, and they cost like $50. I'm not going to pay $50 for a bunch of transparencies. This is ridiculous. So finally,
the life of a hacker.
I know. So finally, just swallowing defeat, I went on Amazon, and for $2.60, I ordered this like really nice pair of like plastic red and blue glasses.
See, so look at this one picture and go, yep, yeah, 3D.
They'll be here Thursday. Drives me nuts. And but this is the thing, and if I had had them by today, I had a plan. Since she doesn't listen to the show, I don't mind sharing it on the show. I'm super excited about this, but now I got, now I've actually invested time and money, and I need more than just like, this is just a passing goofy thing. I want to go and actually take 3D pictures. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to call up a girl and I'm going to be like, hey girl, you and I should go take some 3D pictures. Yo. And you want to come and hang with me? Maybe get some food while we're out and taking pictures, and then and just make kind of a date out of it. But which I think would be pretty cool. That'd be a pretty cool date idea. But it really, really requires the 3D glasses. And the thing is I got really, really close. This was the worst part. So what's very cool about these is that you can actually export the .mpo, MOP thing. It's a file format that is designed for 3D cameras. And what's very cool about it is that file format, it'll work on, or it'll work on anything. So anything with like a 3D screen. So like computers with a 3D screen, cameras that have 3D screens, handheld game systems that have 3D screens. And I'll be honest, I was in Toys R Us swallowing defeat, because Toys R Us was the last place I checked before I went and ordered them. And I was standing in front of the 3DS XL, and they're like $150. I was like, I got $150. And I'm actually sitting here debating with, like, I'm like walking over to the rep to have him open up the stupid box so I can, because they're locked away, so I can buy a 3DS XL so that I can look at these 3D pictures, because it's like, I'm just like thinking super great technology. And then as I was walking over to him, I decided this is ridiculous. I probably should just buy the glasses and just kind of not worry about it for a day or two.
Jeez. Oh, man.
So drives me. I mean, like, it's, it's one of those things where it's like, the future's a great time to be alive, but I can't find these stupid glasses anywhere. It's just, but they're on their way, and it cost me $2. So
that's funny.
60 cents. Shipping is free too. That's the best part. I was expecting shipping to be like $30.
But yeah. Funny. That is funny. Well, there's your adventure. That is an adventure.
Yeah.
By any other name, for sure. So another story you had here was something about a Spidey Sense suit.
Wait. Didn't we skip something?
Did we?
Yeah. How's Cars Talk?
Oh.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Let's talk about that one. Oh, yeah. I totally skipped it. No problem. So House of Cards, we talked about this a little while ago. And there was another article that came out that was pretty much like Netflix used big data to guarantee that it would be popular, which I think they were saying that it is the like the number one streamed thing they've had already.
That is a title designed for this show, that's for sure. Netflix, arts and entertainment, big data, popularity.
Guarantees. It was pretty much guaranteed that I would see it and add it to the list.
Exactly.
Kind of how that worked. and they, it was kind of fun. They had a like a proven. They had like what are these called? Like circles of success. Proven circles of success. So in one circle, it's a Venn diagram. So in one circle, they had like David Fincher as a director. In another circle, they had like the Britain version of House of Cards. And then in the last circle, it was Kevin Spacey actor. So like, if we put all three together, brilliant.
Wow, if that's all the more thought they put into their proven circles. Okay, good.
No. that was just like an example of it.
Okay.
So, but basically what they've done is they have 27 million subscribers with 33 million worldwide. Okay. And they know what they stream and they tag every single movie with the director, with the actors, with the type of movie that it is, the length that it is, all sorts of tags, Pandora, right?
Right.
Music genome thing. They probably have their own version of a movie genome, IMDb type of deal going on. And so what they know is that they also know, like, when you play something, when you pause it, when you rewind it, when you fast forward it, when you rate it, when you search for something, and so they know all of this stuff. And so they're able to do like the classic big data stuff and say, okay, we're looking for something to do. What are some areas of interest? And in this particular example, I mean, it was like movies that include Kevin Spacey are popular on Netflix. Okay, they've always done well. And they also knew that the British version of House of Cards did pretty darn well. And they also knew that the director, who, by the way, he also did like The Social Network.
Yeah.
He said that people tended to watch those movies from the beginning to end, all the way, for example.
Interesting.
And so using this, what they were able to do is take because essentially when you're investing all this money into production, you're taking a bet. And they were like, we know that it will do pretty well because we're going to put these ingredients together to, form one awesome movie.
Yeah.
And so that was what they did. And like I said, the data has shown that it's done pretty well, which is cool. And so they did the exact same thing with Arrested Development and Hemlock Grove. I don't know what that is. But essentially what Netflix is able to say is, yeah, we don't have to guess if this is going to be good or not. We can already tell you if it's going to be good. And furthermore, we will only fund the ones that will be good.
What are they doing with Arrested Development? This is something I care about because I love this show.
Oh, they are going to do another season.
Right. Oh, and that's because of Netflix.
Yeah. It's going to be Netflix only. Netflix is buying it or bought it and is going to produce another season and release it on Netflix.
I didn't know that. That's like the greatest news that's ever happened.
So there you go. And they knew that you would like it.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh. I didn't know that. I thought it was just another like TV still. No, really? Okay.
So what they said, though, is they're only doing one more season. It's not going to go on. And they said the biggest reason was they were having trouble getting all the actors back together.
Yeah. Well, they're like all of them are crazy successful now. It's like Will Arnett.
I've never seen it, so I don't know.
What? Okay, so it's the dude. You've got to watch this show, dude. It is unbelievably funny. It's on Netflix.
That's not going to work for me.
yeah, that's right. I have watched every episode of Kenner and I liked it. So we used to just like put it on and I've probably watched every episode like 4 or 5 times. Like,
wow.
It's only 3 seasons, so it's not difficult to do.
Oh, okay.
But it is unbelievably funny. It's one of those shows where you'll start to realize that people have been quoting it all around you for a really long time and you had no idea. Or every time I go, hey, brother, that's a quote from...
I've never heard you say that.
Oh, you never... What? Okay.
I think I couldn't do it with a straight face.
Yeah. I was like, got me. That's cool.
So that's... And the other thing they're saying they're able to do is that when they're advertising it, aka like running trailers for the show, which I guess they're doing on Netflix, or you know, when you actually click to watch the trailer, they said that they created a whole bunch of different trailers. If you like to watch like a lot of like say Thelma and Louise, they're going to show you trailers featuring female characters who are strong. And, and they're like, and if they find out that you're like a film buff, which somehow they'll know that, they'll do trailers that reflect Mr. Finch's touch, or Fincher's touch. And so not only are they funding shows that they already know are going to be popular, but when they're showing the trailers and advertising it to the subscribers, they have made multiple versions of the trailers and are showing you the one that they know you will like the most.
I say what's interesting about this is that I'm like everybody does this, you know. They you know, there's every major network has formulas that they use, which is why sometimes TV shows are described as formulaic. What's interesting about this and why it's unique and why things like Pandora are better is because, you know, it's one thing to as a you know you as a you know, there's all you can, you know, when you're having the show pushed at you, you have a binary choice. You can choose to either listen to the radio station or not, to watch the TV show or not. You don't have any control over all, like, the break points. You don't have control over, and you're limited to, like, a relatively small whatever's in that time slot. Whereas because with Netflix, I feel like you're way more able to, you have more control. There's actually more usable data, and so you can start to change things. And it's funny, all of a sudden, you make that comment of, like, you know, we talked about the idea of where commercial breaks go or whatever. That's all of a sudden that's brilliant because that's right. I don't necessarily stop. I don't pause the show during the middle of commercial breaks. I don't wait till commercial breaks. I do it at X point. Probably it's probably more like about halfway through the show. I get all antsy because I'm bored and I go do something else. And because I have the attention span of a gnat. And so, you know, I'm sure they've discovered that, whereas now instead of having the commercial breaks be at 15 and 45 minutes, they just make the commercial break, and by commercial break I mean the cut in action, at the halfway point, because that's where most of the people actually break when they have control over it themselves, you know, which is information that the DVR can give people now more and more thing, you know, Comcast can get there, you know, whoever can get that more and more of that information. But I don't know, that's unique. And it's funny, now it totally makes sense why they released the entire season in one clump, or, you know, at one time, because they find that nobody ever watches a TV series one episode at a time, one week at a time. That's only on network TV where people have to watch it that way. So they're like, that nobody does that. Why would we do that? That's stupid. That's not how people watch it. So that's cool. That's really, really interesting. I'm very, you know, I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, I know. I like what Netflix is doing. I wish they had better movies, but, you know, but what they have.
They might now, because I mean, if they get seriously into this and this becomes big business for them, you know,
It is going to help them decide which movies and studios they want to fund big time, and which ones, you know, if they can get it for a deal, cool. But if not, that's not the end of the world, because they know it's not worth it. You know, it'll help them spend more appropriately,
more intelligently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting though is, you know, the worry they're like, okay, and now what happens if you have like this big data thing, like funneling all of your creativity? They were saying, like, what happens when directors approach the editing room armed with knowledge that a certain subset of subscribers are opposed to jump cuts and get off on gruesome torture scenes, or they're just interested in sexual romps? And so they're like, it'll you know, really degrade the quality of the movies. But Netflix was like, no. All we do is we buy the idea and the concept, and then we just hire the right people and give them the money to do good work. And like, yeah, for now.
For now, yeah. All that. The thing is, I hate to be this way, but I mean, you're talking about entertainment, like very little. We're not talking about high art here. I mean, even when you watch the Oscars, you're not talking about high art. You're talking about entertainment, you know, and it's arts, the guys that don't do anything but release their movies to film festivals, those are still going to show up on Netflix because they still want them to be on Netflix, and they'll have all the creative control that they want. We're talking about, like, boom, high-powered entertainment. That's what we want. And if what everybody wants are gruesome sex scenes, well, then that's what higher-powered entertainment's going to be. Now, is that going to be good for society? Who knows? But that's not what we're asking here. But that's not what we're dealing with. It's like you're complaining. Okay. That's the most irritating comment you could possibly make. Because if you are talking about comparing...
I just read the article.
You've got all the freedom of Netflix.
I do not represent the New York Times.
You've got all the power of Netflix and, like, all the freedom that comes with that. And you're saying that that won't be very free because they're using big data as compared to Time Warner or Disney, who not only are they using big data to create incredibly formulaic shows, but they actually have the time constraints of a time slot and commercial breaks on top of it all. I mean, that's, you know, yes, what they're basically saying is we're not giving our directors carte blanche to do whatever. We are going to make it. We are going to intelligently design shows that more people watch based on how they watch it, when they have the freedom to watch it any way they want to. And we're going to make it that way so it facilitates the way people on average like to watch it and what they like to watch on average and who they like to watch on average in aggregate. Which is what everybody does. Now they just don't have to worry about time breaks. Like,
yeah.
How is that somehow, like, horrific, you know?
They're just upset that they're getting better at it.
Well, I mean, yeah, but how is that bad? I don't understand how that's bad.
Well, and at the end of the day, Netflix isn't the only one making them. And, you know, so even if Netflix just totally dials it in and, you know, is never creative again.
They're never creative. They're just crazy entertaining.
Yeah. Well, even if that's the case, you still have other studios who are going to push the envelope in different ways.
Exactly. That's the dumbest comment, man.
I'm sorry. But the rest of it is cool.
Okay.
So you should check out House of Cards, man. Have you watched it?
I'm about halfway through the season.
Okay. Scale 1 to 10.
Okay. The first half of the season, I'd give it a solid 8. It's very entertaining. But I'm at the point where the main character's not quite at. He's opening himself up to some of the flaws of his character, and that's when it starts to bother me because I tend to like superhero type character architecture types for your main character.
Oh, he is not a superhero.
Or either superheroes or like super evil. I don't want somebody that I'm supposed to root for who has like these deep. I realize that that's like one of the weaknesses of my character development is I'm not very good when it comes to the main character building really complicated characters. You either are supposed to like them or hate them. And this one's just really frustrating because I do like him. I do want him to succeed. And all of a sudden he's being a total jerk and, you know, and I like the fact that he was a jerk and I wanted him to succeed despite the fact that he was a jerk, but I don't know. It's for the birds. We'll see though. I like it. I'll finish it.
Okay. And
if nothing else, cause I want more of that kind of stuff. And I am going to watch the fourth season of Arrested Development like crazy. Very excited. Very excited. Okay.
Let's try this again.
Yes.
The bodysuit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is pretty cool. Actually, it's a really simple concept. Basically, what happens is they build a suit that has a bunch of sensors on it so you can sense, like, so that it knows if an object is approaching you from behind and or from the front or whatever.
Sense.
Exactly. And then it gives you like a tactile sensation. It's got like a vest. So if somebody's coming at you from behind, you'll feel like pressure on your back and you're like, oh, someone's coming from behind. And they tested it where they like put, they did the trust your instincts, Luke, by like putting a blindfold on somebody and having like people
use
come
the
at
force.
It. And, like, exactly. And they were like, and they would give them like these like ninja star type toys. And they're like,
that's what throw
it. They say throw it at your attacker when they come at you. And they said like people were legitimately like they'd throw it and they'd hit the attacker most of the time. It actually worked pretty well, but it's a very cool idea because what it is is it's basically saying, you know, if we were to, you know, we're talking about wearable technology, if you were to, you know, build something like this, let's say into your Google goggles or whatever, where like it can, you have a computer that's aware of your senses, and then it starts to give you tactile input. You know, we talked about this with like the watch. You know, what happens if you had a watch that could like give you like could do pressure points on your wrist to give you information like what time it is or something like that, where what happens if you could you could do more than just vibrations, or if you could do vibrations but do it directionally so that you can be aware of it. And I don't know, I just thought it was a really cool concept, and I think it's the sort of thing that you'll see move into the world of like army technology and the military technology and cops and stuff early on, people who actually engage in combat. Especially like if you can get really sophisticated ones that can tell you when there's like, oh, by the way, there's a dude with a, sniper rifle 150 yards behind you, go, you know, and then you can actually get all spidey sense on it. Or there's a grenade that just fell at your feet. And so you don't actually have to see stuff in order to react to it. Oh, it was a very cool little demonstration. I think there's a video on this, website. Let me check. I decided, nope, there's not.
There's a picture of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
There's a Via News Scientist. Yeah, I don't see it. But that's cool. I like some of their use cases too. They're like, if you're a cyclist, makes it a little safer. If you're a football running back.
Yeah, that actually.
Is the guy behind me or not? Yeah, that'll be totally illegal. But
yeah, for now.
Dude, I was the quarterback, right? You won't blindside it anymore.
That's actually. You say that'll be illegal, but why? I mean, like, you know, at some point, Google Goggles is going to get good enough where you'll be able to build them into a helmet. Why can't the quarterback have like a heads up display where it's I don't know? Did nobody watch?
Or better yet, I wear it while watching the game, like in the stadium, and ESPN feeds me all the stats and puts the little line.
Oh my goodness, dude, that would be awesome! Automatically projects it over. That'd be very cool.
I'm kind of like, I like the idea of live sporting events, but I also like all the extra information you get from watching it on TV.
Dude, that I didn't even think about that. That's really smart. I feel like I'm the only person that watched The Sixth Day with Arnold Schwarzenegger, where he was like cloned, and then they thought they killed him for his clone, but he actually.
I saw it.
Yeah, but that was like the opening sequence of the TV show. Is they've got this like quarterback who's got like the heads up display, and it's all super technology, and then he gets hit.
I don't remember that. I guess I have to watch it again.
Breaks his neck, so they kill him and clone him. And
that's right. I remember that. Do I?
Yeah.
Maybe I do. I need to watch it again.
It's a terrible movie, but
it's probably on Netflix, huh?
Probably. It's really not a very good movie, though.
come on. I'm the clone. No, you're the clone.
Yeah, jeez. I don't know. I thought it was but it's, you know, I wonder why we always assume that kind of technology will be. It's like, you know, you get like super sophisticated, you know, it's like the Olympiads with their like negative resistant like swimsuits that like propel them through the water.
That's true.
You know, that's it's true. Like you get this really cool, like, you know, we get really high tech stuff. Why can't we embed computers in them to help out?
Well, I think they will, like you said. I mean, because I think they already have like earpieces
right
in their helmets. So it's just that, you know, it's got to be a slow evolution. Yeah, that's a little too far-fetching right now, but I think it's cool. I would totally wear it. Mm. I don't care.
Me too.
You're convincing me that the cyborg way of life is the future.
y'all think I'm crazy. Just wait.
Just wait. That's cool. That is cool. So you linked to this other one, and I honestly don't know what it is, so you're going to have to tell me.
Okay. Why the HDMI connector?
Blah, 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 yeah. Blah.
Okay. So this is what's going on. So this is interesting. Basically what happened was there was a dude who they were doing some tests with the video out on the iPad or the iPhone over the new Lightning connector, which is the new little 8-pin one that can flip upside down. And like you can't plug an HDMI cable directly into the iPhone or iPad because it's only got the one little plug. So what you do is you go out and you buy a little adapter. They call it the AV adapter, and you plug it into the Lightning connector, and then you plug your HDMI into it. And you can even plug another Lightning connector into it to give power to your device so you can charge at the same time. This device costs $50, which is ridiculous.
That's pretty expensive.
It's very expensive. And what was interesting was they were talking about...
So it allows
about,
you to, like, play it on your TV. Is that the deal?
Yeah, exactly. You can output video to your TV. So if you have, like, HD movies on your iPhone, like I do...
But this is, like, half the price of an Apple TV.
Of an Apple TV,
do
right.
The same thing for you.
Right, and you can... It's a little more portable. But it's expensive. It's like $50. And everybody's like, why is it so friggin' expensive? It's ridiculous. And you like can't buy them for cheap anywhere. Like you can't just go online and go to China and buy them, which is weird. Because usually you can buy knockoff ones for inexpensive. So these guys, and then there was another thing. So this article started out, if you and it actually links to one of the comments that I have. But if you go up to the top where the actual article is talking about it, basically what they said was we were looking at what was going on with it, and we noticed that they call it mystery number one. When we turn on video mirroring to send out an image through the Lightning AV adapter, the system tells us that the maximum optimum resolution it can do is 1600 by 1900. Hang on, that's not 180p, you're saying yourself. That's exactly what we said. When we plug it into an old dock connector AV, the system gave us 1920 by 1080. So that's a bummer. Questionably, Apple's iPad mini tech specs claim up to 1080p video out support, but we can't figure out how that's possible. Maybe they mean adapter upscale 1600 by 900 to our image to 180p. And then the mystery number two, they talked about artifacts. So when you actually are projecting, it's not a perfect screen. There's actually artifacts left over, which suggests some sort of compressing and decompressing act. And everybody, or, you know, process, which everybody's like, what the heck's going on? So basically what's going on here is they're looking at they're upscaling, they're decompressing the image as it comes out, which is, they're like, that's crazy. So there's obviously got to be something sophisticated going on in the adapter. And basically what they're saying is this AV adapter, we thought we were going insane. This is just an AV adapter. Why are these things happening? Limited resolutions, lag, MPEG, artifacts. Hang on. These are the same things we experience when we stream video to an iOS device on Apple TV. And so basically what they said was like, it's almost as though you're not transferring raw HDMI data. We're not. So what is going on here? Well, they started to take apart the AV adapter, this little $50 adapter. They got out their hacksaw. They took the whole thing apart.
Wow.
And you look at this picture that they have here. It's ridiculous. There are a ton of different components. It is a sophisticated circuit that they have built here. And then they like flipped it over to go one step further, and they see a little chip on it that's soldered to it. Your eyes don't deceive you. That tiny chip says ARM, and the H9, the part number, are on these points, are points towards RAM, 2 gigabytes worth. That's right. They built an entire system on a chip into the AV adapter. That little adapter is a computer. And all it does is it takes data from the iPhone, decompresses it, and outputs it as HDMI. But it's a full-blown computer with RAM. It's an actual thing. And they're like, you know, it asks a couple of questions like, what operating system is it running? What are they doing with it? Why are they doing this? This is crazy. And basically what happened was when you click on the link, it's going to obviously move you right over to a comment. It turns out there's an Apple engineer who just so happened to be reading this blog and decided to comment and explain what was going on.
I liked his name, Anonymous Coward.
Right. They talked about a couple of, he talks about a couple of different points on the, on what was going on. But basically what he explained was that the reason why Apple did this is not because there's not enough data that's going through. Number one, it does allow them to use a smaller compression standard, which is kind of nice. And it does allow it to go faster and use less power. But what they said was the really big deal, is there isn't a standard output now that's built into the device. They literally say each adapter that we build can do its own upscaling or downscaling based on whatever it's designed for. So we can have one type of communication protocol out of the iPhone and then do all the different changes in the AV adapter. So instead of building, you know, instead of having to change the iPhone as new standards come out and forcing you to buy new, you know, everything, we just have one thing. And what it does is he claims that this makes it much more forward compatible because it's guaranteed that it'll work for a long time, you know, because it's not format specific. And that's really the big reason why Apple would build a computer to run everything through on the AV adapter. That outputs HDMI video. And I don't know, it was just I thought that this was really is an interesting article, kind of little interesting thing. But what really blew me away about this and what I think is really interesting is this kind of goes back to what we've been talking about. This idea, you know, is one more point in the, you know, in what we've talked about, where talking about computers and everything, you know.
Yeah.
The Nest thermostat, that was such a big deal. And one of the big things that they said, you know, we read you that art, we talked to you about that story, I think it was last week or the week before, where basically they said the reason why Nest is such a brilliant way of doing it is because there was a bunch of Apple employees that knew how to operate systems on chips, basically little computers that are built all in, and you embed these little computers and then you write whatever you need it to do and then you just go on. So there's these very simple tasks that are being run by, you know, little computers that have RAM and have, you know, processors and have hard drive space and have everything that you need in order to do this. And so you can build these very, very sophisticated devices with full-blown computers into everything at very cheap costs. And that's essentially what Apple did. And
$50 cheap? Okay.
Well, maybe, you know,
from a computer standpoint. But
yeah, exactly. Right. And that, well, that's the thing. You know, you think the Raspberry Pi is about $50. You know, that's right. Exactly. It's, I mean, it's kind of like the rest. No, it's a computer. It's a full blown computer that's doing this process. It's just a very,
seems like it's overkill and eventually it'll get simplified, right? Where they're like, well, this is what we know how to make and we can do anything with it. So, you know, it's a Swiss Army knife tool.
I don't actually
look even more specified. I feel,
well, I would actually say no, I bet they don't. I bet what happens is they just get cheaper over time. What my argument was actually going to be was this gives them a tremendous amount of flexibility. So you can start building AV adapters that are really, really sophisticated using essentially the same hardware. Because now it's just a computer. You just program it to do whatever you want it to do. And then you just start selling them. And so, like, for the 4K TVs, you are now forward compatible with the 4K TVs or whatever else comes out. And, you know, I think you're starting out with Samsung and Apple are really your two big companies that are going to embrace the, and all of the employees that they kind of offshoot are going to embrace the idea of building computers into everything, little computers, and programming little computers to do even relatively simple tasks where you might used to have built a single circuit board or whatever. Now what you're going to do is you're just going to build a device.
Well, what I liked what this guy said too about this is he goes, presumably, we can have firmware updates. And so, yeah, you talk about the quality being a problem. We know about it, and we're working on it.
Right.
And that is, you know, that's kind of exciting to be like, I mean, I know that, like, with Pebble, that's one of their things. They're like, yeah, we designed this so that we will make updates and upgrades, and we'll fix some of the software issues. Obviously, from a hardware perspective, it is what it is.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, that doesn't mean that's the last thing in the world.
Right. The nice part about this is because it plugs into the iPhone, they probably have some crazy sophisticated stuff that they never told anybody about, where you can program these things from the iPhone. That's like, you know, where, you know, the next time you plug it into an iPhone, it'll be like, give us 1 second while we do something we're not telling you about. And it updates it. All of a sudden the compression is better, or it works with your 4K TV or whatever.
Yeah, it's probably some stupid thing where once you type it in, it flips some variable on the phone that says, hey, when you're checking for an update, don't forget to check for this. And, you know, so it like pings the server twice and it goes, oh, cool, it has an update. And so the next time you insert it, it just – it takes the 20 seconds and it goes updating. You're like, oh, weird. And then it's done.
Right. And what's really, I think the funniest part about this is that one of the complaints about the AV adapter is how long it takes for it to, like, you plug in the AV, you plug in the HDMI. I guess it just takes forever. Like, it takes a minute for the whole thing to, like, turn on and start to project your image, you know, and everything was like
booting up. Huh.
Yeah. That's why. It's got to turn on first. It's a computer. It just doesn't have a login screen or it doesn't have a Windows, you know, welcome to Windows screen. So I don't know, dude. It's just fascinating. And that's so clearly the direction that we're going. And, you know, Apple is one of your big leaders in that. But it's like it makes you wonder how many places you go, you know, how many things have this and we don't even realize it. And how long until everything has this, till your watch is like this, your glasses are like this, your clothes are like this. Well, we've talked about Apple Watch, Pebble. We've talked about Google Glass. We've talked about your Spidey Sense suit. You know, and, you know, how long until your light switches have this? Until your, you know, obviously, you know, the big ones like your refrigerator and your oven should have them. But why not, you know, as this stuff gets smaller and more sophisticated, you know, it just gets better and better and better and better and better. It's very cool. I don't know. I'm super stoked about it.
That is cool. and it's not necessarily for this particular cable, but for the overall trend.
Right, yeah, no, it's really annoying for this cable because it's ridiculously expensive.
I know.
But, gotta
start somewhere.
And I wanted to go, I actually, when I got my iPhone, I went to go buy one, and I was like, what, $50? And I have since decided that once I have a reason to, I was going to get it just so that I could have it so I could go or, you know, do whatever. But now I've decided that once I actually, you know, get it, I'm just going, you know, once I have a reason to have it, whether it's a, you know, a TV or whatever, I'm just going to go get an Apple TV. Like, what the heck? Why wouldn't I?
Exactamente.
Which I, you know, part of Apple's, you know, it's almost like they did it on purpose. But, I like it. I thought it was interesting.
That is interesting. That is very cool. Very cool indeed. Wow, man. A lot of cool stuff going on this week.
Yeah.
I like it. I like doing this podcast because we get to cover things like that.
Yeah.
Which is neat. Mm-hmm. So, good talk, man. Good talk.
Are we calling it early?
Yeah, because I have to go.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We technically did all the ones we highlighted.
I know, but there's other things to talk about.
I know.
DARPA that can throw bricks. We got Penny Arcade reviewing the Surface Pro.
Okay. Here, this is a new section of the Furlough Bros.
Oh, man. Okay?
We're making this up on the fly.
Okay, this is super exciting. Right?
This is it. This is rapid fire, okay? You have 30 seconds to talk about a story. And then I get 30 seconds to rebuttal.
Okay. Are you going to tell me when?
Here, hold up. Oh, I can't set this by seconds. Well, that's dumb. At least I don't think I can. I can't. All right, I'm going to do a stopwatch, whatever. Dude, let's just go. All right, so we're going to do this. You pick a story, just give us a 30-second highlight.
I'm ready.
And we'll switch off, okay?
All right.
Maybe. Go.
3D printing cars. We're talking about big scale printers. You print out different single components. There's a dude, he's building these like full on vehicles. It's like stronger than steel in some cases because they can, you know, we talked about this like weeks ago about like really sophisticated structures that you can build out of 3D printing that's lighter and cheaper than steel. You build it in one shot. It's going to create an entire cottage industry of custom built cars. Really, really cool. It's coming. It's the future. The future, like we said, this is the year of the printer, the 3D printer. Like, this is when it starts.
Time.
We'll back. Okay.
Okay. My turn.
Are you picking a different story?
The magazine is It's a magazine that's on the iPad only. It started out as a very like, well, this is really hard to do. A really like simple, easy to do, easy to read, not very heavy, not very fancy, but it has amazing articles. And this guy is finally starting to like, I just love the business model. And he's starting to open up where you can now share a story. And then so you can see him on the web. I just really like, I think this guy is transforming the way magazines work. You should check it out, the magazine.
You can also get it on your iPhone, for the record. I have it right here.
Yes, true. Your turn.
It's very cool. Okay, my turn. Uh-oh. Piracy has dropped by 26% in the last year. Crazy. Why? Because people have become moral again. No, that's not why. It's because of Spotify. Services like Spotify, people say that that's been a big part. Why would you – you don't need to pirate music. Basically, it's the frictionlessness. $10 a month gives you all your music. Basically gives you what piracy did, but without any of the time investment. The other reason is because piracy sites have become more and more crowded with malware and spyware and stuff. So people are, you know, moving up across that.
All right. You can now sign in using Google Plus, just like Facebook Connect, you know, assuming the website updates it. One of the cool things, too, is they'll have, like, if you share a story to the stream, instead of just, like, a like button, you could be like, oh, I want to buy that, or I want to register for it, too. So, like, interactive like buttons right in the Google Plus stream. Sounds kind of cool.
That is cool.
More to come in the future, I guess.
All right.
Done.
Intel is opening up the foundries to tier one third parties. That basically means big time manufacturers who want to build chips that don't use Intel technology or Intel circuit technology, but use Intel manufacturing techniques. They claim that this is a really big step in the process of basically opening up the doors to Apple to have Apple build their chips in Intel doors without using Intel core technology. That's a big deal, but nobody cares about it except me and Intel and Apple.
I love it. Also, speaking of Apple, there was a cool article on The New Yorker talking about Apple versus Wall Street. And basically, it talks about everything that I hate about Wall Street, where it's not good enough just to grow. You got to grow bigger, faster, better each year. And so, as you know, Apple's having some trouble right now with their investors and cash hoarding. And this whole article was like, Apple's right because they're investing for the long term. And if this were any other company, you'd be like, yes, that's exactly what you should do. But it's Apple, so expectations are unreasonably high. And so no one's ever happy with them.
With due whatever. I don't know what I was trying to say there. Penny Arcade, the dudes who make the comic. It's a pretty good comic. I recommend it. He did a review of the Surface Pro. He said it's pretty awesome, especially the stylus because it's like pressure sensitive. It works real well. It's not laggy.
Oh, I did read that. It was good. It
does everything that he wants it to do, and it's one of those things where it kind of made me want to buy one.
Yeah, that's the best recommendation I've heard.
And it's funny. Everybody I've read everywhere, they're like, wow, this is really cool. This actually – why can't Microsoft get other people to say this? This is great news. Come on. So – I don't know. It's a good review. I recommend it.
All right, cool. And then my last one is that, in case you missed it, I said it really quick. WebOS is no longer with HP. LG has bought it, but their intent is to put it into televisions and potentially phones later. So WebOS is still not dead or something.
Cool.
It's dead.
It's dead.
Yeah. It's back from the life. It's back from the dead.
It was dead when Palm said, hey, we built a new operating system.
Yeah, well, you know. Still around.
Yeah. It's the walking dead.
Okay, that's all mine. So,
okay, I got one last story that I want to cover. DARPA, have you ever heard of the Big Dog Project? It's this robot. It walks around. It's freaky because, like, people, like, kick it and stuff, and it doesn't knock down. Well, they've now attached an arm to it so it can chuck cinder blocks, like, 30 feet.
Whoa.
Which you'll notice – people don't kick it anymore. But it's one more step in the process of creating robots that can kill us. And as everybody said, really? I was emotionally prepared to get shot at and lasered at. I was not prepared to get cinder blocks chucked at my head. So, I don't know. This is terrifying, guys. Good work, DARPA.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So there you go. That is the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast Roundup right there at the very end. Love it. Cool Beans. So everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my mustache plus bearded brother is Matthew Furlow. So we will talk next time. What did you think of that rapid fire roundtable?
That's kind of fun. I do. You know what? I don't know if we need to do that every week, but we could do that in weeks like this where there's, you know, stuff that I just want to mention.
Yeah. Cool.